to start the tape?
All right, tape's running.
Okay, call the meeting to order.
Do we have any members of the public on or in attendance in some other way?
We do not this evening.
Not hearing anybody. Do we need to move into executive session?
We do. We need a motion to move into executive.
That motion to move into executive session.
I move.
Second.
Moved by Karen, seconded by Ian. All in favor, say aye.
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 All right, give me a moment.
We're going to switch the tape. Executive session.
All right, Bob, we're back into open.
Okay, consent agenda. Can I have a motion to approve the minutes of the July 9th meeting?
I move to approve the minutes.
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any questions or comments on the check register? Okay, could I have a motion to approve the check
register? Wait, I have one question. What was the $31,000 for module parts and installation?
That sounds like the new filter modules at the treatment plant.
Okay.
We replaced, that must have been just a portion of the bill, but we replaced all the filter modules for two of our skids, so half of the filter modules.
Okay.
Move that we approve the check register then if there's no questions.
Yeah. Well, I got one more, I guess. It relates to a question later about the Lost Canyon pumps getting turned on, but was the Smith and Hartson charge, was that related to water rights with the Lost Canyon pumps being turned back on, or was that more just normal business across the district?
We've been pretty active with Jeffrey from Smith Harvickson. He helped us with the adding the point of diversion for the shallow wells down on the river to move those water rights and add allocation down on the river. There's also been a couple water right proofs that have been due. These are old small water rights that eventually the district has to proof up on, but essentially we just asked for extensions at this time. I'm going to work with Jeffrey when I've got the bandwidth potentially around the winter time to try to come up with a plan on proofing up on the district's rights. It's fairly complicated due to all the different sources that we have.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions on the check register? Have a motion to approve the check register.
So move.
Second?
I'll second.
All in favor? Aye.
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 PO.
No POs tonight. And if it's okay with you, Bob, I recommend we move agenda item 4 to the end because I think a lot of the questions on department updates we'll cover through the meeting. That'll okay. Help things move a little more efficiently.
All right, so we move to item 5 then, petition for the process of ERC quantity and customer accounts.
Yep, so Anna's not with us tonight, so I'm going to take this one. I'm going to start with just a little bit of background for the board. So when a new customer is interested in connecting, the first step is to pay our impact fees. So our internal staff works through an impact fee calculation based on the size of the home or the use of the connection in the event that's commercial. What comes out of that is essentially, I'm going to use 9,000 square feet as an example. If you're going to build a 9,000 square foot home, it's effectively three ERCs or three equivalent residential connections for the district. So you essentially pay three times the impact fee. What happens is that number then rolls over into the billing system, into the generation of the account for the customer. So, that customer who built the 9,000 square foot home now pays three times our base fee for his or her monthly bill. And they also have three times the volume in each of our ascending conservation block tiers. So meaning they can use three times as much water in each tier before they move up into that next higher price tier. So we've had a couple of these, we've had a couple customers over the years inquire and complain about the fact that, you know, although they may have built a larger home, they're not using much, if any, water. The most recent customer, you know, has, I don't remember the exact ERC count. Again, call it three ERCs in his account, in his base. He's roughly paying a couple $100 a month for water, and he's using 2,000 to 3,000 gallons a month. So my feeling was is that I believe that we should allow, or we should have a petition process for these corner cases, basically, where we've got customers who are using very little water. It doesn't seem equitable to me that they're paying, you know, potentially hundreds of dollars a month in their base. And then furthermore, this whole concept of, you know, the district wants our customers to conserve. For these customers, I mean, they're low water users anyway, but that conceptually, you know, they have the ability to use a significant amount of water before they move into the next tier. So we drew up some language basically as an interim step. I'd like the board's opinion on it, to allow the district to review usage when a request or a petition comes in. So what that looks like is a customer calls and you know, wants to move forward with a petition on their ERC count only in their, you know, only in their monthly bills. We're not going back and looking at impact fees or anything like that. We look at the last 12 months of usage for, it has to be the, you know, under the same ownership over those last 12 months. We look at their last 12 months of usage. We can calculate how much water they use across the year by volume, compare that against the level of service in our impact fee study, and equate it to an ERC count. If that ERC count is lower than the ERC count in their account, their billing account, then they'd be able to reduce to whatever that resulting calculation is. Again, I think it's a good idea. I think it's rare that we get these cases. I think we'll probably see, you know, at most, maybe a handful a year. I think it's probably onesie twosies. Steve ran some numbers today on district exposure. He said we've got, and correct me if I'm wrong, Steve, but we've got, I believe, 26 accounts where the ERC count is greater than 2, but the usage is low, you know, under 100,000 gallons a year. So we might be talking a couple $1,000s per account in these cases. And again, I think we're talking maybe a few customers a year. And I think the further we get out, for those customers that do want to make the change, they'll likely make it up front. And then we're working with customers that, you know, just come online each year. We're not going to do any kind of, we don't intend to do, any kind of big advertisement or mailer on this. It's just, it allows for a process internally to deal with these cases.
What about if they sell the home and the new people use a lot more water and look at it and say, oh, you know, they paid for three ERCs. Aren't we entitled to have three ERCs?
Good point, Bob. We talked at length about that. So what we would do is we would maintain the ERC count where it is, but we would notify the customer that that change had been made and that they can move up to that original impact fee calculated number, you know, that was originally determined based on their home. And the reason that we said that and the reason that we landed on that was it had to do with a lot of people when they're buying homes, they're looking at utility bills before they purchase them. And we had concerns that if we, you know, my initial thought was we'll just revert it back to the impact fee calculation. The problem is that could be a significant change in their water bill. So we felt like the right thing to do is to keep it where it was, but to notify them, you know, if they're going to put in a bunch of landscaping or if their uses are going to change, they can move back up to what was originally calculated.
That seems fair.
I guess that's the part I object to, is that I feel like if somebody's going to make this change, it should probably be permanent. It would be like if, you know, I feel like if you're going to free up those ERCs for potentially other customers, it would be more of a benefit to the district to say, okay, you're going to go from three ERCs down to one, but then you have those two ERCs to provide to other new customers that, you know, that might need them. So
functionally, Karen, with respect to available ERCs, the district is stuck with the original calculation. So this is purely a billing, you know, a monthly service bill change. So meaning if we calculate three ERCs up front, we have to fill out a concurrency report and we have to allocate three ERCs to that customer. If that customer uses very little water, it effectively works its way out with respect to concurrency just through the math, because over time, concurrency evaluates the usage per customer or per ERC. So,
right. I mean, it seems to me.
What, Bob?
I was just going to say that it seems to me that if you don't allow it to go back up on a new buyer or something like that, that there could be a cause for action that says, okay, I want a refund of my impact fee because I paid for a right that I no longer have. But our counsel isn't here to answer the question, so.
I've run through, you know, really procedurally all this with Dave, just so the board understands. You know, rules and regs are adopted by the council. What I've asked to do is I've asked for, you know, interim approval basically from the board. In our rules and regs, it said the board can provide written approval to deviate from the rules and regs. That's why I've got a signature block on this memo for Mike. And if the board does approve it, then the next time we go in front of council with changes to our rules and regs will incorporate it at that time.
I doubt that, like you say, there's going to be very, very many people who are going to get wrapped up in this.
That's been our experience.
John. Yep.
Sorry. Any other comments on this?
Yeah, I had a question. So what if someone petitions to reduce their ERC and then they have a change in their family status or some condition where more people move into their home, or they change their mind and all of a sudden they want some crazy landscaping and their water usage goes through the roof. Are we proposing to review that every 12 months to see if they still deserve that lower ERC, or how's that going
to
work?
No, it's up to the customer to reach out to us. So, you know, if they had a change in use, I mean, in theory, they should know that they requested the change and how that impacts them. If they do have a change in use, you know, my feeling is we'll accommodate the change back up to the original, back up to that original calculation. They would essentially, Ian, they would have to request a second review.
Or if they did it without that review, you would catch it on your side is what I'm hearing.
We would not necessarily catch it. It would just show up as usage. They'd have higher water bills and we'd have to explain to them, look, if you want to adjust your ERC count, we're going to look at the last 12 months. So, you know, if they have a change in use and they want to really capture the bang for the buck on that change of use, they're going to have to eat the higher usage bills for a year.
Okay.
Any other comments? So we are looking for a motion to recommend the change in policy to the county council. Is that correct, Scott?
Yes, it would be, I think I have it written on here. Yeah, so I would say in the agenda, consideration of approval by the Administrative Control Board to allow the district to adopt a petition process whereby customers can reduce the ERC count in their billing accounts based on the previous 12 months of usage data. And just to clarify, this would be an interim approval and a recommendation to forward to council when we head that direction with our next rules and regulations change.
Okay. Can I have a motion to that effect?
So moved.
Second?
I'll second it.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Bob,
since you're here this evening, what I'm going to do is I'm going to change that signature block to vice chair, and can we send that to you tomorrow?
Yeah, that's fine. I'm around.
Okay. Alrighty, moving on then. We are up to agenda item 6. I'll turn the time over to Lisa and Steve.
Results. I just realized, Scott, since I'm sitting in the ops room, I can't pull up my computer to show the financial update. Would you mind sharing your screen with it?
Nope, not at all, Steve. I'll get it up. Not at all, Steve. I was muted. I'll get it up for you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, can everybody see that?
Yes.
Yep.
Need me to zoom in a little bit, or can you see it all right?
I can see it fine on my screen.
Okay.
Yeah, me too.
All right, Scott, if you would just go to that first, yes, that page. So as you see, our income so far this year is $1.61 million. That's $757,000 better than what we had budgeted. That increase is mainly due to higher revenues. Our revenues are about $648,000 better than planned, and our expenses are about $108,000 lower than planned. So together, that's how we get to our $757,000 improvement. Total revenue is up about $1 million. Most of that is retail water sales, and then also Weber Basin increase there. We've got some offsetting decreases in a few other areas like development related collections, impact fees, interest, and Park City Wheeling so far. Expenses, we are higher than last year, but still below budget. Looking at revenue a little more closely down at the bottom of this page, you'll see that retail water sales are up to $560,000, Promontory Water about $111,000, and then Park City Wheeling is still under budget, but every month they're making back ground, so they'll probably get back to budget by the end of the summer, I would suspect. Now, where we're lower than last year is we're about $242,000 lower in development-related collections, so that's mainly impact fees. And then $108,000 lower in other revenue. That's mainly interest, which you'll see on page 3. Our interest in our PTIF accounts is down from about 3% at the end of the year to this last, at the end of July, we were under 1%. So our interest income is dropped dramatically, and that's why we're about $100,000, a little more than $100,000 lower in interest this year than last year. The retail water sales is really our residential customers. Our large residential are using a lot more water. There are more of them, and also residential, but we're kind of up across the board, but a lot of it is from those large residential customers. Let's see. Yeah, let's go ahead and just look at July that, Scott, you're just scrolling up to. You'll see the residential is where we were well above budget for July. Everything else was, relatively close to budget. Golf continues to be very high this year. When we get to usage, you'll see that they're using almost twice as much water this year as they were last year. Expenses, our expenditures so far this year, at $4.67 million. $139,000 lower than budgeted. So it's interesting, since we're pushing so much water through, we are seeing some increasing expenses in distribution and treatment plant and things like that. But at the same time, we've been able to save money in other departments. especially engineering, where we haven't hired a GIS specialist in the little bit of time between Julie leaving us and Sam coming on. So it's kind of, we've seen the increased expenses where you'd see it because of increased usage, but we've been trying to save money in other categories as best we can. On page five.
Really quick.
You sure can, Karen.
On the expense thing, on the variance column, I feel like the 108 should be negative or the 385. I feel like it's hard to, and maybe this is just the CPA in me, but when I look at this, I think, well, the 5.7 is better than the 2020 budget. So that's a variance of 108,000, but it's a lot higher than the 2019. Like, I don't feel like both of those should be a positive number. I think one should be a positive and one should be a negative.
Okay, let's look at that, maybe making it a little easier to jump out and see what's good and what's bad kind of thing.
Yeah, that would just be helpful, I think.
Hey, Steve,
okay.
Bob, any trends in expenses related maybe to COVID or, you know, strange nature of operations, anything?
I wouldn't think directly to COVID. What it really is tied to usage. And with the hot summer and possibly people being home more, we're seeing more usage. So that's driving the expenses tied to those. COVID doesn't seem to be having a direct impact much on our revenue or expenses, you know, in and of itself, let's say.
Right.
Yeah, our personnel, we haven't had any, you know, as far as leaves or extra time out of the office, everyone's remained healthy. You know, we've stocked up on our PP&E, but that hasn't been driving any significant expenses there.
Okay. Max?
Steve, on the revenue side, back to residential, do you think that that's solely attributed to the weather? Or are there more residents occupying their part-time homes full-time now?
It could be a combination of both. I did a little look into the large residential customers so far this year versus this time last year. And the average large residential customer was using 15,000 gallons this year per month. Last year, they were only using 10,000. We've got about 60 more large residential customers right now than we did this time last year. So that much in growth from this time over the year. But I haven't really looked at occupancy to see if somebody who was low has increased from last year to this year because they're there. That would be, I'd have to dig into that a little more.
And that's a little bit harder to tell. I think the majority of, you know, it's related to irrigation is why we're seeing the huge increase. I mean, last year we essentially, you know, missed one whole month of summer because of the late start to the summer last year. So we're essentially one month ahead in revenue of where we were last year. So I think that landscaping and that irrigating really drives the number, I think, more than occupancy.
Yeah. And even though people may not be at their house, they still are having, you know, the property manager water the irrigation and keep the lawn looking green, even then if they're not there in the hot weather. So it really turns more, like Lisa said, more off weather than occupancy.
Okay, thanks.
You bet. If we look at cash on page five, our cash, we're up about $2 million in cash over last year. About a quarter of a million of that is in actual operating cash. The other 1.8 is in reserves. So you see we keep on putting money away for the rainy day and to pay debt. You know, the regionalization reserves continue to go up nicely as we take that 30% of whatever Weber Basin pays us. We save that and put it in that regionalization reserve. So we are, the money we're making now, we're tucking away for a rainy day in more ways than one. So, but it looks good. The cash is strong. Collections have been good. We'll get to that at the very end. Customer growth. We have seen fewer connections, you know, 56 this year versus a four-year average of 71. They're on page six. Impact fees were at $282,000 through the end of July. And Lisa and I were sweating getting to our $500,000 budget. But between the end of July and right now, we've gotten three huge impact fees out of the colony. So as of today, we're at $466,000 of impact fees. So we will probably make budget, and Scott will win a little bet we had internally of making that or not. So that was good. Some large homes in the colony. So that will help with our impact fees. Consumption, just hit a couple of things. So if you look at MRW year to date, so we use, our customers have used 1,205 acre feet this year. Last year, you know, it was, or the 4 year average was 874. Last year was only 826. So you can see the change that weather can cause for us. Golf, like I mentioned earlier, last year, if you look at just the 2019 year to date, it's 210 acre feet. Promontory Golf has already taken 412 acre feet this year. So the weather really impacts their usage. Those are kind of just a couple of highlights that I thought were interesting there. Large residential and residential are both up. Residential about 35%, large residential, like I mentioned before, 50%. Capital budget continues to just move how we would think it would. The JROC is currently working. If you've driven over by the Hidden Creek, they're knee-deep into that, and hopefully there's a few hurdles that really aren't my expertise, but they're working on those, and hopefully we'll get that project nailed down here before the end of the summer. And then the other projects, the Nugget Well is back up and operating. The Summit Park project, I think they're wrapping up. We just need to get invoiced for it. And Weaver Basin still needs to invoice us for more of the interconnect project. We did make this report. Usually on the quarter, we make this bigger report. But since June board was very close to the end, we didn't have time, so we kind of pushed it to July. So you have the full income statement in Appendix A, the full cash report in Appendix B. If you go to Appendix C, this is just kind of that visual representation of revenue, where you can see for 2020, we've been above every month. So part of that is growth, but a lot of that is just higher usage. So we'll keep trending that and let you know how that's working. But
Community water is fully in all this, right?
And community water's fully in. Almost everything is metered over there. There's just a few homes that we're having trouble getting in. But community water isn't really the difference there. Yeah, it helps, but it's much more than that.
Well, I think in round numbers, it's like a 13% increase in customers, and yet the residential usage from that previous chart was up almost 50 compared to the four-year average. So it's a portion of it, but
yeah, exactly. And then it keeps coming and going. Oh, kind of to your question earlier about usage and revenue, you can see how our revenue is so tied to, even if we're loaded up in January with lots of people in town, it doesn't push usage. It doesn't push revenue because we're still, you know, under 600,000. Then you get out in the summer when people are irrigating, and that's that huge curve, the huge bump. And so that's where you can really see how much the outdoor usage really drives our revenue compared to indoor usage. Appendix D, we keep following cash collections closely, you know, just make sure that COVID isn't having an impact. It's amazing. Our residential customers are being very good about paying their bills. So of the 291,000 that was outstanding at the end of July, you can see 60,000 of that was from Park City and 142,000 of that was from Promontory. That only left about 87 from all our other customers. So they're being really good about paying, and we'll just have to keep an eye on Park City and Promontory, make sure they pay during this month.
Have we reached out to them? Is there a reason they haven't paid, or?
We're giving them just a couple more days before we reach out. Promontory usually gets a little behind in the summer, so this isn't abnormal. And Park City, that's a little out of the normal for them, so we may call probably Scott or we'll probably reach out to Clint next week and just say, hey, is everything okay? You know, do we need to plan on, can we plan on your revenue, or do we need to adjust that you may not be able to pay us for a little while or something like that? So as long as we get it collected, eventually we'll be fine. But yeah, they didn't pay during the month of July.
I haven't been
on the bottom here, Steve.
What was that, Bob? I'm sorry.
Is that I haven't been around much, but the last I saw, they were kind of complaining about their revenue being down, right? Park City.
Yeah, I've heard that too. See, and unfortunately for Clint or their water system, they operate as part of the city, so they don't get to take their own revenue and pay their own bills like we do. So he may be submitting it for payment, and the city may be putting it in a drawer, holding on to it. We're just not sure. Both of those amounts have gone up since our last billing, so there's more to collect than even that. But like I said, the next due date isn't until August 25th, until the next time penalties would kick in. So that would definitely be a red flag if we don't have money by then from either of them.
Yeah. I'd imagine we'd see payments within the next week before we hit the next 25th deadline. And just to note on here, too, we have resumed late fees with the July billing, and we're starting to notify people that if we don't receive payment and they're over 120 days late, they will be getting a shutoff notice. So we're keeping track of those delinquencies. Like Steve mentioned, our collections are still good. Our delinquencies and notices aren't any, you know, larger than we've seen in the past. So we're doing okay with customer collections, MRW customer collections on that side.
So, yeah, so I think everything's good to report for right now. We'll keep you updated on how the expenses trend and revenue, but you can probably look out the window and see what they're going to be. High revenue and a lot of expense to get that water out to people, power and just repairs and maintenance. Brian's crew has been extremely busy this summer, I think. So that's my report.
Are there any other questions?
Thank you, Steve.
Steve, this is a great report.
Thank you.
Yeah, great job, Steve. Well presented.
Thank you. Lisa gets to tell you more about cash now.
We just provide this semi-annual cash report. This kind of goes over our balances at the end of the year, which we talk about a lot, and then we kind of look at it at the six-month period. This report also goes, not this exact report, but we report all of our balances to the state in June so they can see where our investments are held and where those cash balances are. So you can see at the end of June, we had about, this will slightly differ from what was in Steve's cash report, obviously. I'm looking at June here. We were looking at July. So just under $16 million in total cash. If we go down to our cash categories, our total operating reserves, this is kind of our checking account, our repair and maintenance reserve balance is kind of what we have discretion over. Are holding pretty steady from 18, 19, and 20. We're at 273 days cash on hand, lower than where we were last year, but still above policy. We talked about our regionalization reserve. It's about $2 million, and And with that operating reserve, that's our checking, and what's in our PTIF account operating reserve, it's about $5.5 million, and that makes up the majority of the balance. Let's see, our debt reserves held by the district, pretty consistent. This would be our impact fees, changing slightly as we took off the series 2009 bond that was paid off, but we added the series 2019B, so that changed slightly. We also have our rate stabilization fund in here, and like our impact fees. The impact fee number is a little bit higher than normal right now, and really we're waiting for the second billing from Weber Basin on the Park City project that's been going on. I think we made our first payment of about $200,000. So we have another $300,000, I think, when that's all done. So that balance will continue to come down as we use that money for it for impact fee projects we've designated. Debt reserves held by the trustee go down a little bit. This is pretty consistent. You'll see the jump up. That's really related to our refunding and the advanced refunding we did on those Series 2012 bonds. So we'll be finishing up. That refunding will be done at the end of next year. So that debt reserve balance is where it's at its required level right now. But when those are fully refunded at the end of 2021, this number should be much smaller. Construction cash, that was at, the balance that Steve was showing you increased from last year, almost $500,000 of that is related to the construction cash, and that's for community water. They fund us quarterly on that, so you can see at the end of the year we had almost $1 million. We used some of that to pay for the well that was drilled over here in Silver Creek, and some other smaller projects that we've had come along the way. They'll fund us again in the next month or so that we can get JROC the almost $600,000 that we'll be paying to them this summer. And then other cash, those are really our customer deposits. That makes up the majority of that. It kind of is just a indicator of how many security deposits we have out there and what kind of building's going on. It's staying fairly consistent, so the building's still happening, so I haven't seen that drop. It's actually gone up a little bit from the end of the year, so that's kind of remained the same. And that's it. Are there any questions on the cash balances? Yeah. Okay, that's all I had. I think that's all we have for finance.
Yeah, I think that's it.
Okay.
We are starting to work on the budget, so we're meeting with department. We've met with individual departments. We're meeting with the directors in the next week or two. And we'll have a presentation about 2021 revenue projections at the September board meeting.
Great.
Okay. Thank you, Lisa.
Sure.
I'm presuming that we don't have anything for legal tonight, Scott?
I don't believe so. I'm going to stop sharing my screen. Nope, no legal tonight. Dave's not able to join us.
Want to loop back to department now, or do you want to give your comments?
No, let's get into my comments. I think I'm going to cover a lot of potential questions here. So it's been a very active month, as you might imagine, on kind of the strategic side of things. And it started off right after our last board meeting. If you remember, we had a work session planned with council to present a rate study. And there was a kind of a hustle to get from the county, from leadership at the county, there was a hustle to get a leadership meeting put together before that work session with Bob and Mike and I, and Tom Fisher, Chris Robinson, and Doug Clyde. And they wanted to discuss the rate study and kind of where we're at. So, Bob, do you want to share kind of your feelings or comments from that meeting?
Sure. I kind of came away not exactly sure where all this was going to go, to tell you the truth. I mean, it sounded like they got the message that we were sending them in terms of what the subsidization was and what it what we needed, if you will, to cover our costs and be fair to our ratepayers. And I thought that, you know, we'd made the sale, so to speak. And then at the end, I kind of felt like that particularly Chris had waffled on us a little bit. And, you know, it was kind of like, well, go back and give Summit Water another chance to, you know, look at your study and make comments on it. And, you know, and then we'll sort of pick it up and see where we are. And, of course, we mentioned that we'd have to have a rate hearing on it, and, you know, which would be another kick of the can, if you will, for Summit Water to take a look at it in a different form. So my takeaway was that, you know, while we had a path to where we thought we needed to be, it wasn't necessarily a clear path. And, you know, it still was one that required, in effect, a certain level of concurrence from Summit Water. I didn't hear a willingness to say, well, this is right and this is what we got to do, and, you know, at the end of the day, some of the water just have to swallow. So I guess we'll see. So I don't know if we've shared it with some of the water in the interim.
Yeah, there's been a lot of development since then, but I just wanted to get your take, and I agree with
that. That you would characterize it, Scott? Or?
Yep, I agree with you 100%. I think right off the bat, I wouldn't even say for me that it was at the end. For me, right off the bat, I felt like Chris was... kind of positioning for some additional negotiation and discussion. And what came out of that was, Chris recommended, that we weren't going to go to council on Wednesday, of that week, that, he recommended that we hold a stakeholder meeting, and as Bob said, to discuss, to release the report to Summit Water, to discuss it with them, that was acting in good faith, to sit down with Summit Water, Weber Basin Council, and representatives of our board, much like we've done in the past, and discuss it. So that was really the outcome of that meeting, was for me to start working on a stakeholder meeting. Fast forward another week or so, and Summit Water held a shareholder meeting, and the A shareholders took control of the board and terminated Andy Garland. Summit Water is now under new leadership as a result of that. And that really kind of launched me into, you know, a number of these strategic calls and discussions with various stakeholders that we work with. I've met with Tom Fisher a couple times since Bob and I met with him. I've met with Weber Basin on the phone with Darren Hess. He was similarly... not supportive of just jumping right to the calculated rate in 2021. His feeling was...
Who is that, Scott?
Darren Hess is an assistant general manager with Weber Basin, and he's really the liaison that we have for regionalization. His position was it's awfully difficult to explain a 25% rate increase and a 20-plus percent rating last year, 25, 20-plus... potentially this year. And I explained to him, you know, that we recognized we weren't where we needed to be, and we're working on getting back, right? We're trying to get back on track here. So
think of all the years that we've been subsidizing.
Yeah.
Study's correct. Politics are what the politics are.
Absolutely right. One of my conversations with Tom after Andy was removed You know, we kind of agreed I needed to get on the horn with Tage Flint, who's the head of Weber Basin. I had a really good talk with Tage. We haven't actually formally, you know, had a discussion beyond, you know, shaking hands and saying hello since I've been in this position. Really not a ton of output, I guess, from that, aside from, you know, one takeaway is the importance of the master agreement. He said that, you know, at one point years ago, there were 25 lawsuits going on in the basin amongst all the water parties. And the master agreement was the only thing that saved, you know, got us to where we are today. So anyway, outputs, I guess, from all of those discussions, master agreement being one, two, the future is very uncertain. I guess it always is, but maybe more so now. And lastly, you know, it's highly, you know, I guess my opinion even a couple of weeks ago was it'd be highly likely that Summit Water would litigate no matter what we came up with as far as a rate increase. So, And I guess most importantly for me, the takeaway was, you know, I think I recognized an opportunity for myself, for the district, that we got to get in the driver's seat on this. You know, we can't sit back, I don't think, and let, you know, drop this problem into council's lap and Weber Basin's lap at the stakeholder meeting. So, you know, I became active with reaching out to Summit Water directly. And my position is I want to work with Summit Water and try to gain some traction and potential resolution before I even get into this stakeholder meeting, so that we can go in, show that we have the ability to work together and have, again, at least some traction or some solutions that work, you know, that work for everybody. So,
do they have somebody you can talk to at this point?
They are. So Lisa and I had lunch with their leadership, their new manager, Jeremy Sorensen, and Dave Fuller, who's their assistant general manager. He was there, has been there for a few years. He's been great to work with. So we did that last week, you know, and I just extended that, you know, we want to continue the improved relationship we've had over the last few years. And, you know, we've got some work to do. You know, Mountain Regional has to sign up to rates for this regional water supply contractually for the next 5 years. So we've got a job to do to identify what these costs are. You know, they've got a job to do to protect their customers, of course, but we need to work through it. They were very, very receptive. We agreed at lunch that the appropriate next step was they had Bowen and Collins, who's an engineering consultant firm, review our rate study, and they had some specific written questions. So they, you know, we agreed that let's sit down, Mountain Regional and Summit Water, and let's go through those questions, and let's, you know, let's work towards some answers on that, because it doesn't do any good. Go ahead.
Scott, can you share that report from Bowen and Collins with us?
Yeah, of course.
And then who is the new GM and assistant GM?
So the GM, his name is Jeremy Sorensen. Jeremy comes from the Strawberry Water Users. He was the general manager of that group. They're a large irrigator. So he does not have any experience in Summit County. He does not know the background, the politics. He hasn't worked in municipal water service before. So, you know, all these things I think are potentially good things. Obviously, he's going to follow the agenda of the Class A shareholders. You know, but at least he's coming in, I think, with an open mind, with respect to working relationships. Dave Fuller is the assistant general manager.
Did they sack their legal counsel also?
I am not sure. So.
Yes, they
did.
Did they? Okay.
Oral is no longer there.
No, that's right. I wonder if Tim's referring to Scott Lilja. I'm not sure if he still supports them. In any event, we did have that meeting this week to review Bowen and Collins' questions. I think it was very productive. I think most of the questions we were able to address just in the conversation. There were some things that related to policy and things that they are what they are. There was one, I think, the most significant outcome to that was Bowen and Collins highlighted some potential double dipping on the debt service and depreciation elements, where we were capturing revenue on the principal portions of our debt service, and we were capturing depreciation on the same assets. Fred, Lisa, and I, over the last 24 hours or so, have worked through, what that means and a couple other little tweaks that we agreed needed to be made. And I can share the kind of final results of that with you. To jump right to it, it's essentially a 15-cent reduction in the rate in year one. And if you want, I can just pull it up. Maybe first, I'll just field some questions, and we can openly discuss it, and then I'll pull some numbers up.
Are there any? Have our guys responded to that?
Say that again, Bob.
I forgot the name of our consultant to put the study together. Have they responded to those comments?
Yeah. So we worked with Fred, our consultant, today to revise that rate study. And I've got those results here.
Okay. But so he thought their argument had merit?
Yes, he did.
Okay.
Just bear with me a second here as I pull that up. I'm going to stop sharing my screen for a moment, which I'm not. Okay. Bear with me 1 minute, please.
I'm guessing the Bowens and Collin report didn't highlight any areas where the rate would go up, only down.
That's a safe assumption, Ian.
Just checking.
Some of this stuff is nuanced enough, though, that they may have gotten unlucky, but. I think the good news is there's not a huge change. There was no smoking gun.
Well, but as I read that letter that they wrote to before the, like, it sounded like they didn't seem to agree with the regionalization process. I mean, is there any risk that they could back out of that and, would there be an issue there?
That's a good question, Karen. I mean, that would be, that's worst case scenario, right? That's worst case scenario for everybody. I'm hopeful that that's not the case. I do expect them to lobby very hard for the East Canyon importation project because there's an option in the agreement where Summit Water will be paid a little over $6 million for infrastructure that's already in the ground that would be put to use. But my understanding of the contract is that it's up to Weber Basin to do an analysis of the alternatives, and, they're going to choose what is most cost effective. If that proves to be true, then who knows what the project is. But I do expect Summit Water to lobby hard for the East Canyon project.
And how much is the total project for the East Canyon project?
I mean, the round numbers that everybody always throws around, regardless of what we do, is $100 million. And the numbers that that we are proposing in our rates, and I believe even up to Park City's rates, they are still cheaper than if Summit Water executed or moved forward on the new project if Mountain Regional doesn't immediately participate. Because my understanding of the contract is that You know, Summit Water would really have the expenses because they were the ones needing water up front. And then I believe those expenses get further diversified as more parties need water. I need to brush up on that a little bit, but that's my understanding. And I've heard, leadership at Weber Basin say in the past that, look, one party can't afford this project. It's going to take at least two. To your question, Karen, that's worst case scenario, and I hope we don't go there.
I know we have water. We have water rights in East Canyon, right?
We have 1,000 acre feet. That's wrapped up in the agreement, and it's in East Canyon Reservoir.
Right. Because isn't most of that water going down to Ogden and other points?
It is. The total agreement has total agreement's got 5,000 acre feet that can be pulled out of East Canyon and or moved to another spot. I asked Tage about our ability to exercise use of our 1,000 acre feet, potentially out a number of years. I'm going to share that data here shortly. His position was... they're not interested in piecemealing it. Either all 5,000 moves or none of it moves. So, again, it's a challenge that we may have in the future. I'm going to share my screen quickly here. So this is the results that came out of the discussions over the last couple days. Essentially, the recommended rate, the draft report in June were the original numbers that were presented to the board in June, 610 in year one, 766 in year five. Again, we have to put these numbers on paper and make a five-year commitment at the end of the year. The newly updated rate is this recommended rate line. That makes those adjustments that we talked about, moves the rate to 595 in year one and 725 in year five.
Certainly better than
the in-between years are the same logic piece.
Yeah, it's a straight line, linear fit, Bob. The driver on that is 120 days cash on hand in year five.
Yep.
Okay. Must be 7 o'clock.
So where are we at? So I guess I have a couple questions of the board if there's no further questions for me.
Nope.
So I guess my questions for you are you comfortable with me presenting this data back to Summit Water next week to try to further these discussions?
I am.
Yes.
Certainly.
Okay. Go ahead.
Nope. I was just agreeing.
Okay. And then the next question is, to be able to continue to make progress here, I fully expect that either in the next meeting or certainly in the stakeholder meeting, let me back up a second. I think by going back to Summit Water with these numbers next week, I think we're going to have buy-in on our rate study. I think that we've answered their questions, we've heard them, we've made the changes. Bowen and Collins isn't going to have any further questions, is my thought. The question then becomes, did they try to further negotiate? I would expect that they would, right? They're going to try to continue to phase this next step in. So the next question I have is, are you comfortable giving me the authority, and really me and Mike Kobe the authority, to further negotiate these rates in the stakeholder meeting? And my goals, I guess, are to be on track, to be on schedule in 2022. I think no matter how we play this, we're likely... going to need to move a bit in 2021.
See, Scott, to me, that sounds like the Republicans in Congress who consistently negotiate against themselves.
Well,
I mean, we have a study, assuming that they agree to what their consultant said, for the changes that should be made, it should be kind of mox nick. Actually, we're done. No.
I agree. I would be
very, very reluctant to, you know, negotiate. Now, I might be willing to finance it by saying, okay, we'll do 585 and 221, but we want, you know, a nickel a year or whatever it is on all the other years going out. You know, we'll smooth it, but we got to get to the same total revenue base.
Okay.
I was going to say, I agree with Bob's position. I feel like we gave him a whole year essentially by jumping through these hoops that, you know, that they participated in causing with backing from the council. So I feel like we've put skin in the game, and at this point we go with our number and our study.
All right. Karen, any thoughts?
I mean, I guess I wouldn't mind negotiating a smidge, but really it would, like, I wouldn't want to find out next month that we agreed to settle for $5. You know, if you came back and said it's going to be $5.75, I might say, you know, that's fine. But
okay, fair enough. Tim, anything from you?
Well, if the idea is that we're going to get back to $7.25 and whole, then obviously, if the only thing is on the table is some sort of financing arrangement, thing, they've got to be real careful, because if I was them, I'd push it back into the future, because it gives them another day, right, to argue that or do the politics or whatever. So I certainly wouldn't put anything on the table, but if they just say, can we do a little better than that, then I would just say, you know, from them.
I'm not going to offer anything.
I'm just telling you what I expect to happen is all.
I mean, you can't blame them for asking.
No, and I think, you know, like I mentioned before, I believe that it's, you know, that it's Chris's position and potentially to some extent Weber Basin's position that, you know, that we should phase it in. We should take another step next year. But if board's position is let's stick with this, you know, I will forward that forward and then we'll see what the rest of council has to say.
You know, as I said in, I hope, softer and more eloquent words to Chris, he's pretty liberal with the wallets of ratepayers of Mountain Region.
Yep. And what I can do is, you know, I can forward the board's position, you know, during these discussions and these meetings. And if they have a specific offer, if you will, then, you know, we can discuss it next month. Obviously, we're starting to get up against the clock here with our budgets and revenue and things like that. But
well, Scott, these rates that you have here, we're largely going to be in consensus with their expert or whatever. That I think that's the position that we got. We're in agreement on these things.
Yep. I think that's a good point, Tim.
Yep. All right. Any more discussion on this?
That's it. That's it for me on that topic on 8A. If we're ready, we can move on.
Yep.
Next up, 8B is the
concept. You don't need anything from us other than no motion required.
Nope. So the next step is I'll meet with Summit Water next week, and we will discuss these updated numbers. The stakeholder meeting is scheduled for the 25th. And Mike and I will attend that with Chris and with Jeremy Sorensen and Dave Fuller from Summit Water and Darren Hess from Weber Basin. I believe Tom's out of town for that meeting. And, you know, that depending upon the outcome of these next couple of meetings, the next step would be a work session with council. In a perfect world, we'd have consensus and we'll be presenting presenting these rates with support from Summit Water.
Got it.
Is there any way we could swap out Chris at that meeting and take Kim Carson instead?
What a lame duck at this point, isn't she?
Yeah.
But she's an advocate.
Yeah.
She is. I don't think so, is the answer again.
Yeah, Chris is kind of their water guy.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. Conservation plan. We submitted a draft today to the state. The state will review it, provide red lines, and return that to us, at which point we'll make some final updates and we'll present it to the board a little later this year. Doug Evans has written the last two plans. He updated those plans as this draft. Lisa and I worked to redline that, try to make it more concise. Tim and I discussed his comments yesterday, since Tim's the conservation chair. And Tim, I spent a few hours over the last 24 hours working on it to try to clean it up a bit and address some of your concerns. So that's been forwarded on. I did not write an executive summary because I want to wait until we get the red lines back from the state, and then I'll put that into the final copy. That's the update there. The water resource utilization and projections, I am going to share just a couple exhibits with the board. I thought this month was a good opportunity to just kind of bring you up to speed on how our water projections are looking. And if you've read the memo, it's pretty straightforward. Can everybody see the memo on the screen?
Again.
Okay. So I'm not going to read through all the language. I'll just explain the charts. Really what you're looking at here, you've seen this before. There we go. You've seen this before. We've made some significant improvements over the past 12 months or so, one of which is just related to data. As you remember, we did that deep dive on trying to really clean up our data as best we can. That led to some corrections in these reports. And then most significantly is all the work up at the treatment plant. This concept of moving these water rights down to the Weber River, and then treat the ability, the improvements at the plant to treat, higher rates of flow, higher capacities. We've increased plant treatment production by about 500 gallons a minute, which is 750,000 gallons a day, which is a huge deal. So when we kind of review this green line here, this is our safety surplus that we've talked about in the past. It's 750 gallons a minute. I'll try to zoom in a little bit here. Ian, looks like you're squinting. The red line is our supply line. The green line up here is our demand line. The difference between those two lines is the magnitude of the vertical bars. So, you can see here in 2020, we're looking at about 1,700 gallons a minute of surplus capacity or so. That decreases with growth, and then we have some increases that pop up. We've got 2022, we've got a reduction in the amount of water we're delivering to Weber Basin and on to Summit Water. Another reduction in 2026 here. You can see here in 2029, I'm projecting a capital project at the treatment plant where the treatment plant was originally designed for 6 filter skids. There's currently 4 in there. So both the Lost Canyon system and the treatment plant, are built to handle another about 1.5 million or so gallons per day. So that comes in the form of 2 potential capacity improvements. One in projected 2029, one projected about 10 years later. And that keeps the district looking healthy for a number of years. This is out through 2050. The caveat here is that, this chart assumes that these production rates are 24 hours a day. Groundwater production would not be sustainable at that rate. So one of the things that I need to work on, and the challenge is it takes years of operational knowledge and data to really understand what runtime or duty factor our groundwater sources can handle. But, you know, the long-term concept is to drop a duty factor in here into our groundwater sources, which will in turn reduce the source water production. At the moment, we are just focused on taking monthly water quality tests on our groundwater, and we are working towards a bit of a rotation, a resting rotation, to try to, you know, preserve the quality of those sources. But purely from a...
You could also pull forward those two treatment plant investments, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
The challenge, you know, the challenge being is there's some water right challenges to put behind this, right? So it's one thing to have the facilities to produce the water. It's another thing to have the water rights to back them up. So we do have some water rights work that we'll need to do, and I'll just move right into the next chart. You've seen this data before. You know, really what we're showing here is projected growth and utilization of water rights. If we focus on the green line, this is the district's balance, knowing that we're supplying this water up here to Summit Water. Right, so we had kind of talked in the past, well, let's try to keep that at above 500 acre feet or so, which is about 1,000 rooftops of surplus. And the next line down essentially is adding the, you know, this green line, this 570 with Summit Water's the rights that are being used for Summit Water. So as we decrease Summit Water's delivery, you know, essentially when we get down to 2028, zero here, we're at 513 remaining that the district has. And then there's the 1,000 acre feet that Weber Basin has in reservation that we talked about earlier in East Canyon. You know, so the question is, back to Tage's point, you know, we're not going to move pieces of the 5,000. So, you know, the district, you know, I need to get creative, as we have over the past few years, on trying to move additional rights down to the Weber River, Bob, so that we can support those capacity increases.
Right.
So,
right. Who says he's God?
What's that?
Who says he's God?
What do you mean?
Well, is he the sole arbiter of who gets to make that decision?
Oh, no. You know, that's a good point. I think I don't know exactly how that decision process goes, but...
Let's get our boy Dave Gurr doing something to earn his salary.
Yeah, well, that's true. That's true. You know, at this moment, you know, it's not my focus, but...
Yeah, I agree.
But, yeah, you know, we may find that we want to try to get those rights moved sooner rather than later, and you know, really focus on utilizing our surface water source.
Right. Okay.
Tim, you had a question?
You know, it's never really settled in my mind. What does Summit Water do in these out years when they don't take very much or nothing from us?
They will contract with Park City.
Oh, that's what their plan is?
Yeah.
At $8 a...
Yeah, $9.
Now.
Yep.
Okay.
Tim, did you have something?
Yeah, can you roll back up to the previous slide?
Sure.
I'm trying to understand where the top line on there, which one of those is the supply line?
It's the red.
Is that significantly different from the... from the shares? I mean, you're saying that you weren't... Is it the same as a source involving water rights? because you said that you, one of the issues down here is you have to take into account water rights too. How different is the top red line from water rights?
The top red line is purely the sum of the, think of it as the pumping capacity or the pumping production of all non-regional sources.
Okay. Is there a reason that you couldn't add an additional line on here that would somehow reflect water rights, just so that you could say that here's what we could pump, but the thing is we can't really pump any more than this?
Yes, I think it's possible. It's something that I would have to think about.
Okay.
Is it complicated, Scott, because a bunch of the rights are tied to different sources, so how do you show which right is tied to which source, and you've got all the sources lumped together? So some of them have restrictions and some don't.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly part of it. Yes, Ian, that's part of it. I think part of it would have to do with dealing with, peaking factors. Groundwater sources don't have them, but you know, there's sustainable yield questions. It's just challenging. Moving down here, the last one's just some eye candy. I've been working on, Doug set this up originally last year, but I've been working on trying to support operations and giving them an update every month on these charts. And what these charts are is, just kind of picking jailhouse here. It shows water right utilization over the last 3 years. So 18 in blue, 19 in orange, 20 in gray. And then getting back to your point, Ian, about, allocations on given sources, there's essentially, a percent utilization of rights on that source. So Brian can kind of set up his glide path for the end of the year on the various sources that we have. The takeaway is that from a water right perspective in groundwater, we're underproducing. We have to manage water quality coming out of the ground as well. So we can't necessarily just utilize all of it, which is why I want to put more rights down and really focus more down on the river to the best of our ability. So that's really all I had. It's just kind of an update to the board on the water side of things, and step away from legal and politics for a moment.
Hey, sort of unrelated, Scott, is anybody planning on pumping any water through East Canyon?
What do you mean by that, Bob?
Diverting water into the East Canyon Creek to keep it flowing?
Yeah, possibly. I had a stakeholder meeting with attorneys from Clyde Snow and the Reclamation District here, Sonoma Basin Water Reclamation District, Park City, Summit Water, us, kind of talking about the, Bob, you remember the water banking initiative that they were working on?
Yeah.
They're doing a pilot program on East Canyon Creek. They're trying to come up with innovative ways to, create incentives for water users to add additional flow to the creek. Challenging. In the near term, I wouldn't be surprised if the East Canyon Watershed Committee reaches out to us and asks us to turn on. We've got that well that's along the creek, and we can add a little bit of water to the creek. It's not huge. I think it's about a half a CFS or so. And to put that into context, the targets for the creek are about 3.5 CFS in the driest part of the summer. Sometimes it historically has gone below 1 or even dried up in stretches, but certainly they try to keep it above about 1.5 CFS. So we can add a bit to that. And then we share those costs, just so the board understands. The committee members all share in those costs. I think we did it 2 years ago, and the district's burden on that was about $1,200 or so.
It's starting to look a little scummy.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, thanks.
Yep.
Thanks.
On my other, let me just look at my notes for a second. I have continued to work and build a stakeholder group with respect to wildfire mitigation in Weber Canyon. We actually have a site tour tomorrow, meeting up with the Forest Service, researchers from Utah State. Darren Hess from Weber Basin is joining us. Summit County, Jana Young's the deputy county attorney. She's helping out in this area as well. And really what we're trying to do is bring people together, highlight the need to try to mitigate impacts to our intake, you know, to the drinking water source. And obviously there's the WUI, the wild urban interface, right? Protection of private property and homes and public safety. There's elements there. So the idea is get the Forest Service focused with their funding on Weber Canyon, and try to get some research support to them to help, sort of feed into their studies on what makes the most sense. That's all I have in my section. If we want to go back to the department updates, if there's no further questions for me directly.
Okay, department updates. You want to just do a round robin? Karen, do you have any questions on department updates?
No, but I did want to ask, maybe for next month, if this hideout thing actually gets approved, how that would affect us being on the Summit County side of things. I read in the paper that they have JSSD water, but that can't cross county lines, which means it'll affect us at some point.
Yeah, that was one of the talking points that I had with Tom most recently. I don't have an answer to that, Karen.
I just thought for next month it would be helpful.
Okay.
But I didn't have any questions on this month.
Okay.
Ian?
We talked about both the things I was thinking about from Scott's with Summit Water and East Canyon. Sam Grenley, Scott, do you know when the Summit Park Master Plan is going to be complete that Aqua was going to work on?
This year. I don't have a specific a date. Is that it looked like you froze up for a second there, Ian. So we're kicking that off next week, I believe. And it was a 2020 a 2020 project. So do you have thoughts or where are you going with your question?
I was just interested in when it would be done. Might want to take a peek at it.
Yeah, of course.
And then I was going to ask Brian, on the Lost Canyon project, did we already have pumps in those wells? Infrastructure in?
No, the wells were installed prior to the, the booster station going in. That's what was used originally, was those wells, or the intake of the river. So they were already there. We had to do a little bit of electrical VFD upgrades, but for the most part, everything was there. We cut in a T on the main pump line for those wells so we could flush it. So we probably spent, I don't know, 10 grand getting them ready to go and working properly.
That's great, though. Cool. Thank you.
So the pumps, to clarify, the pumps were there. Right, Brian? The pumps, the original pumps were in the shallow wells when we...
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they were already there.
Cool. It's a benefit to us. That's great.
Yep.
And then last question was on... It's not really a question. It's just a compliment. It's on Chris's report that... The one Glen Royal resident that we'd had issues with in the past came to actually give us a compliment. I think that's really cool with the other, you know, complications we've had with residents and kind of people dragging us through the trash a bit. So kudos to everybody for, you know,
instilling that relationship to the point where we actually got some, you know, positive feedback.
Yeah, and Ian, just to be clear, that is the woman that we were having the issue with. She specifically came. That's the landowner there. So it was, yeah, it was, that's like the first good interaction with her in the last year and a half. So
it speaks volumes to me. So you guys are doing all the right stuff. So, yeah, thank you. That's it for me.
Tim?
I have no comments.
Yeah, I'm good as well. Anybody open the floor for a minute? Anybody have anything else?
I'm just glancing at my notes here, Bob. Just give me 1 second. I think we've covered it. That's it for me.
Okay. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Motion to adjourn.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we're adjourned.